Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, April 30th. I'm Ray Graff. Let's see. It's cold. It's damp. It's raining. There's a lockdown. We just aired a show about Lee Harvey Oswald. So I got an idea. Let's do a gardening show. It's so crazy. It just might work. We have Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery with us. We have arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. Hey, you got a gardening question? You probably have some time on your hands. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Always a popular show, The Gardening Show, so call early, 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Bob, Fred, your gardening calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today to answer your gardening questions, a couple of familiar voices. Usually we have three. It's tough to do a call-in show with guests on the phone, so today we have two. And the two are, ready? Bob Graves, horticulturalist, co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Also, Fred Breglia, director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. You got a gardening question? Maybe a question about trees or whatnot? Well, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. It's always a popular program, so I do suggest you call early. We'll try to get to as many calls as we can. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We will also try to get to as many emails as possible. There's always somebody who doesn't get through, and they're annoyed, and I understand that. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's face it, I'm annoyed, too. And with that in mind, let's welcome our guests, Fred Breglia and Bob Graves. How you doing, guys?
Hey,
we're good.
Yeah. We're good. We're good. Good to be back, Ray.
Well, you know, hopefully the next one we do, you guys will be in the studio, but the way things are going, who knows?
Yeah, I know. One day at a time, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I guess so. It'd be really good to get. I never be so happy to get back into WAMC and back to normal, though. So.
Again, you know, it's fun. We had a guest yesterday, Jason Goff, who said, "You know, I miss that WAMC coffee." That was a phrase that has never been said before. And the phrase you just said, "I'll be happy to get back to WAMC," also has never been said before. But I'm glad you guys are here. I hope you're comfortable. Everybody healthy where you guys are?
Yeah, we're doing good.
We're good.
Know,
yep.
Yep, we're you know, still doing a lot of things with the arboretum. The grounds we've been able to keep open, so the grounds are open, but the buildings are pretty much off limits, and we've keep them closed to any visitors, even volunteers. We've been you know, staff wise coming in as needed, doing a lot of work from home, and we had to cancel all of our spring events, including the spring plant sale, which, you know, that is one of those things that I never thought I would ever say or see.
That's
so
tough.
But otherwise, you know, we're surviving, and I will say that a lot of visitors have been coming out and socially distancing themselves around the grounds at the arboretum, and that's you know, I guess that's a good thing to sort of. We have a lot of room here, and you know, a lot of great trails, so that's, you know, it's good to see.
I mean,
and we can help out.
The good thing is, in this time of social distancing, you can still hug a tree, right?
You know, that's exactly it. There's not a single case where, you know, anyone would tell you no on that front. So yes, tree hugging, you know, you can get as close as you need to.
Now, if you can catch the COVID from a tree, I think we're all cooked here. All right, let's go.
Then we're in trouble.
Let's go to a couple of emails before we start with the phones. This one came in quite a while ago from our friend Ann in Adams. Two quick questions, writes Ann. One, can I plant strawberries to eat and also be ground cover to beat out weeds?
Well, you know,
boy, they're gonna. You still have to weed them, don't you think, Fred?
You are. You know, strawberries. It's a great concept. And in a strawberry bed, it's like Bob said. You know, it's very few strawberry beds where you can just put them in and walk away from them and get some great fruit as well. Strawberries are not a no maintenance crop. Wild strawberries sometimes will colonize spots. But in either case, I think you're going to, you know, you could, I think, reduce some maintenance and have strawberries and have a ground cover, but it's not going to be maintenance free. It's not the same thing as, you know, planting like vinca or, you know, in a spot and it, you know, let it take right over with no maintenance at all. It's not going to be that kind of thing.
they need some effort over the years too, because they last from year to year, but the mother plants die off and the babies take over, and there's some effort with strawberries.
Well, Ann,
that's right, especially if you want to get production.
I recommend right. that Ann watches the Bergman film Wild Strawberries, and you won't learn anything about strawberries, but it'll depress the hell out of you. It'll be
oh geez.
Right, this one is from James. James writes. Oh no wait. There's another bit of this. Hang on. Another bit of this from Ann. Her second question. My cauliflower seedlings are pretty big now with lots of roots coming out of the pot bottom. Can I plant them now or is it too soon?
No, you can plant those now. Fred, we usually have our last frost. I don't know about where the Arboretum is, but where we are in the Capital District, our last frost is usually around the 15th of May. But cauliflower can take a little frost, and so
that's
can broccoli,
right.
Brussels sprouts, lettuce, things like that. So, yes, you can plant them now. What you might want to do is put them outside for a few days in their pots and harden them off first, because with the wind and the rain that we're getting, they might get beat up, but the cold won't hurt them.
All right.
That's
this,
right.
This one is from James. James says, how many types of crabgrass are there, and best way to eradicate them from the garden? Let's go to Bob first on that.
Yeah. You know, what most people are concerned about is annual is crabgrass that grows from seed, and it's an annual. There's a lot of different types of crabgrass, but basically the ones that people are concerned about are annual grass. So if somebody says, gee, I got crabgrass growing in my lawn right now, you don't. It's dead.
Okay.
Anything from last year is dead. But it's seeded itself. So if you want to get rid of it, you need a pre-emergent weed preventer, something that prevents the seeds from germinating, and there are organic as well as non-organic forms of that. You put it down before the seedlings germinate or shortly thereafter, so anytime in April. Your organic would be a product that has corn gluten in it, and your non-organics are produced by all the major companies. So it's something where you don't – it's hard to kill it once it comes up,
yeah.
But it's easy to prevent it before it starts.
So one point to note, though, would be if you are planting seeds in those areas where you put that pre-emergent, it will also kill those seeds as well. So you want to make sure you're using the pre-emergents, even the corn gluten,
right.
It would take out young emerging seeds. So, you know, just make sure it's in an area where you're not going to be planting seeds. It would not hurt any of the existing plants. So if you have, like, cauliflower or tomatoes and you're going to use a pre-emergent to get rid of some crabgrass, it's not going to, especially if it's organic and you're using corn gluten, not going to be a problem planting an established plant there. But those little seeds, those are also going to be affected.
All right. And then
the same thing goes for grass seed. You can't plant grass seed at the same time you put a pre-emergent on the grass either.
That's right.
All right, second part of the question from James. Well, then we'll take a break, and then we will hit the phones. This is the second part. We have two dwarf fruit trees, a peach and a cherry. We got them last year, I guess, from Fatigan's. What should we do now to help them for future fruit?
You know, right now is a really good time, and, you know, we're doing that even here at the Arboretum and even on our own properties and stuff. It's a great time to fertilize. And, you know, generally the first year you put trees and plants in the ground, we're talking woody plants, we don't recommend a lot of fertilizer that first year, but that following spring, right now when the buds are swelling and they haven't actually opened yet, that means the roots are, you know, the temperatures are starting to go up a little bit slower than I'd like to see, but they're going up. And those roots are just taking in material right now, and it's getting ready to, when that weather, you know, warms up, it's going to take right off. So getting fertilizer down now for any of your plants would be great, and I certainly recommend organic products and balanced fertilizers that are complete with trace elements. So a lot of fertilizers are not created equal. You want to make sure it says complete. Complete means it has the nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, but it also needs all those little micro elements as well. You know, they say everybody needs a little gold in their life, including myself, and iron and things like that. All those trace elements, all those little micronutrients play a huge role with plant health. So good products yield good results, and the time to get that fertilizer down is pretty much now.
Bob Graves.
Yep.
Well, that was easy. All right.
Yeah, you know, there might be a little selective pruning in the summer, too. But, you know, young trees, not too much first year.
The other thing that we sometimes tell people, you know, the first year you're real anxious to see fruit on it. And if you want to leave a few on it just to see what it looks like, that's fine. But for the tree's health and growing, it's better to take the fruit off the first year so it doesn't put its energy into that and it puts its energy into roots and growth.
All right, let's take a quick break here, and then we will get to the phones. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia are with us, and it's The Gardening Show. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you on kind of a cold, damp day, but a good day for gardening. And the lines are loaded here. Bob Graves is here. Fred Breglia is here to answer your questions. 800-348-2551 is the number. We begin with Benjamin in Rexford. You're on.
Yes. Hello. My question is about Rosa Sharon. I'm planning to plant them pretty soon, and the internet recommended planting them while they're still dormant. But I called around, and it looks like I kind of have to wait till Mother's Day for them to be in stock around here. Is late May too late to plant those?
Absolutely not. No, that's perfect. We have our plant sale traditionally, except for this year, of course, with the everything going on in the news. But normally our plant sale at the Arboretum is always the week after Mother's Day, and we sell everything, and that is an absolutely optimal time to plant. In fact, when they're dormant, and that's not a bad time either, but when we deal with bare root plants, when you talk dormant planting, we're talking bare root. And bare root, I love that way of planting, but all these methods have advantages and disadvantages. And there are some little quirky things about bare root that you need to make sure you do and not allow any air pockets in there and make sure the roots are there's a little crown underneath that sort of bare root part where sometimes an air pocket can develop, and that results often in a lot of loss. But in the time, we're talking mid-May, then by that means they're flushed out. They're either in containers or possibly bald and burlapped, and a really good time to install stuff. So no problems there. You may need to water them in when they when you first plant them, and then just keep an eye on them through the summer. That first year, they're always going to need supplemental water to break up drought times.
Thanks. And do you have any suggestions for how to fertilize?
Hang on, Benjamin. Let Bob just chime in here a second.
Just one quick thing. The recommendations for planting things dormant applies mostly to bare root material, and that's not done as much on the East as it is in other parts of the country anymore because of our weather. So almost all the plants that you're going to get around the Northeast are going to be in pots. So they're already planted. You're just putting them in the ground, and they don't care when they go in the ground as long as they go in the ground that season.
All right, that's Benjamin, right. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks for that. That's actually very interesting. And my second question is, I have clay soil here, so do you have any recommendations for how to fertilize or prepare that hole before I put that tree in there?
Yeah, that's a really good question because a lot of people overdo that step. Generally, the biggest thing you want to make sure is that we don't change the composition of the soil. And it's really easy with clay soils to get carried away with organic material and start dumping in peat moss and tons of compost because, the plant seems to like it better. But ultimately, that plant's root system have to stretch out three times the spread of the canopy. And that means that it has to spread into the surrounding soil. So a lot of times when people overly amend the backfill, really, really give a lot of good, great compost, kind of kill it with care. And the reason for that is they create an in-ground container. So the essence of this story, the moral of the story is that you want to take out the material, take the sod out, and take away the rocks, but use as much of that material that came out of that hole back in. And if you do want to amend a little bit to give it a little bit, kind of a boost, never more than 20% total volume. So if you take out like five shovels of clay, heavy clay, only one shovel of organics for five clay that you're going to add at the most.
All right. Bob, you want to finish up
there? Yeah, one of the things that happens if you put too much organic material, Fred's exactly right here, if you put too much organic material in a clay-type hole, you end up creating a sponge in a bowl.
Yep.
And it holds water. It's almost like it's in a container that has no drainage, so it can drown.
Yeah.
So, you mix a little sand in it or some small stones or some organic material, but not a lot because you don't want to create a sponge.
All right, let's go.
If it's really sandy, you could add a little bit more. And the only other thing I'd say before we let them then go is just make sure that the depth, whatever the container is not any deeper in when you plant it. If it's a little bit higher because you're going to add a little mulch anyways, that's okay. I've never seen a plant die from being planted a little too high, but a little too low is not good. So, error on the side of slightly above that new site.
All right,
in
Benjamin,
terms of the top of the container.
Thanks a lot for that one. Susie in Northampton. Susie, you're on. Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Sure.
Can you hear me? Good.
Yes, yes.
Thanks for being there, all of you. I was wondering, what are the best herbs, if any, to plant indoors in an apartment with mostly sunny, not totally sunny?
Hmm.
And your question was herbs?
Herbs.
Yeah. Well, you're looking to keep them.
Yeah.
Say it, Susie.
Are you looking to keep them in your windows, or are you looking to kind of move them to a patio in the summer or a deck?
Well, keep them in the windows, yeah, ideally.
Yep. Yeah, you know, as long as you're getting a decent amount of light, you probably can get away with a lot of herbs. I mean, my wife has done pretty well. It's not going to produce the high-end quality in terms of volume that you could get outside, because herbs can grow really, really well outside. But in a house, they're strong plants and they're tough plants, and they often can survive. So I know my wife has done basil, she's done thyme, rosemary, tarragon. In fact, we have remnants of all of those being picked over pretty heavily because we're using them, but they're still in our windows and still surviving, and they managed to go through the winter like that.
Yeah.
And we don't have as much light as probably you do. We're a little bit more shady. So
the thing to keep in mind,
go ahead, Bob.
Okay. Well, I was going to say the thing to keep in mind when you're growing something in a window is, even if it's a very bright window, the intensity of that light is hundreds of times less than it would be if it were outside. So you're not going to get the production, and you're not going to get the quality. But they'll grow. They'll stretch a little bit, but you just won't get as much.
Yep. And if you do have a chance to put them out, like in the summer, in containers, acclimate them out, then they're really going to do good for you. And then you could, if you don't use them all, bring them in the fall. And that's what we've done. Anything that was, not used in the fall, we brought in, and we've been picking on them all winter. A few of them, I think we've picked to death, but, most of them have, we're still struggling on in those windows.
Bob Graves is here. Fred Breglia is here. It's the Gardening Show on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. This email came in from Mike in Rexford. We have a few wild raspberry bushes in our yard at the edge of the woods. Each summer, we usually see a few berries, not very many. Is there anything we can do to make them produce a lot of raspberries? Should we fertilize?
Well, what do you say, Fred? So what I would do is move them if you could, wouldn't you?
That's actually the first thing I thought. Yeah, generally, if they're getting in the side of your property, they're probably getting more shade than they want, and they're certainly not being they certainly have a lot of competition. So if you take those plants out, especially while they're dormant, move them to a garden space. Generally, people often say, "Oh my God, these raspberries! How do I stop them?"
Yeah,
they start to really take over in a good way in most cases.
All right, let's go to Kernan in Glenville. You're on.
Hello.
Hi.
I certainly do enjoy your conversation so far, and I was a little distracted by the mention of strawberries, and I have some comments to make in a moment.
All right.
But first of all, I want to plant some sweet grass. I've been reading a book called Braiding Sweet Grass. It's a wonderful book, and it's by a professor of botany in Syracuse. Where can I buy sweet grass plants?
First I will say I know the book, and actually the author of that book did a talk here at Landis Arboretum as well, and it was an amazing talk, amazing book, great, great, knowledgeable person. And, sweet grass has been used in so many ways for so many, for so many years by so many people. In terms of getting it, Bob, do you have any insight as to where? Otherwise, I would say go online and look.
Yeah,
it up.
I think the first place I'd check is online. Yep.
Yeah. What is sweet grass?
Commonly see around here for sale. It is something that grows native more west. I think it's more, generally more in the western part of the country.
Why do they call it sweet grass?
It smells good.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's spiritual for a lot of the Native Americans as well, and it has been used for countless times in ceremonial type ways. But when you burn it, it does have a very, very sweet aromatic scent. And the times years ago, prior to me and my wife having children, we used to be able to travel a little bit more than we do now, and we have taken trips across the country. And when we see patches of sweet grass, we often will just pick some on the side of the road, and you throw it up on the back of the window. And the sunlight will just cook that sweet grass in your whole car.
Really?
It smells unbelievably great.
What happens when you get pulled over? Are you okay?
Everything well, right? You tell them it's sweet grass.
Yes. All right. That old defense. All right. 800-348-2551 is the number. Tom in New Paltz. Tom, you're on.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have one main question and then a minor one that came to mind when you were talking about myrtle or vinca. So the first question has to do with a dilemma that my wife and I have, which is my urge toward building a 16-foot-long fence or my wife's urge, which is to have some kind of vegetation, i.e. like a hedgerow. So if we were going to do a hedgerow, the position where we would put this would face northwest. It would be a line running basically north to south with the face of this heading northwest. The plot that it would go in would be 16 feet long by 3 foot wide. Most of that, in fact, all of it is fill. What we're doing is we're taking out a driveway, so we have to remove the macadam and then whatever fill is below that. So that's the environment, whatever it is, whatever it might be, will go in. I'm thinking, and she's thinking, perhaps forsythia, but I would need to know, does 5 to 6 hours, 7 hours maybe of sunlight, some dappled light on either side of that work for forsythia? And can I make a hedge with forsythia? How deep a hole must I dig, et cetera, et cetera? And thank you for that.
What do you think, Fred? I think it's marginally enough sun. I mean, they'll grow. I don't know if they're going to be nice enough.
Yeah, probably have enough because forsythia can tolerate shade, even though they don't always – they get a little lankier.
Could be by some other deciduous shrubs. I mean, there's some viburnums that would do well in that situation.
Yep.
So there would be options. It would be tougher with evergreens. I think if you're going to go deciduous, that you'd have better luck with that. In terms of the hole, you know, again, just the depth of the root mass of the plant. It might be nice to excavate out some. If you got real crap there, you're going to want to excavate
that out a little bit.
Yeah, you might want to add some additional topsoil.
Yeah.
To give the plants a little bit more rooting zone if it's nothing but really hard stuff. Forsythia would work, I do believe, with the amount of light you've said. It does tend to get a little leggier as it gets a little shadier. But, you know, you can certainly it wouldn't take too much to kind of, you know, put that back into shape. And it has been used in hedge, you know, not really formal hedges, but informally in hedge material, and it does work. Lilac is another one that, you know, a lot of times people don't use and never think of lilac as a hedge plant.
Yeah.
But it's an old-fashioned hedge plant, and I've actually used it. In fact, I've got a hedge at my house with it, and it's worked really well. We've done it as kids at my parents' house. And they do work, and you know, if you use them as a hedge, you often, depending on how tall you want them to go, you can let them flower and maintain it as a tall hedge, but you could actually trim them, and they do actually respond fairly well to shaping and trimming. And I remember at my mom's house years ago, I was actually landscaping it with, we had some old lilacs, and I used to just trim them, keep them all formal as a hedge in front of the house. And can't tell you how many people have asked, like, oh my God, what kind of hedge is that?
Yeah.
And because it doesn't really flower when you shear it, we just use it as a foliage. But it also does work. And although lilacs do like a little bit more sun, they're another one like forsythia that could tolerate shade. They don't like it, but they can live there.
Right.
So as long as you're getting 5-6 hours of light, I think, you know, that would be another option. I don't know if you'd have enough light there for privet. And that's certainly not one of my favorite hedges, but it's a tough plant, and it does work.
The other thing that would work well in that situation, Fred, I think would be Spirea van Houtti, or one of the taller Spireas.
Even one of the bridal wreaths like the bridal wreath Spirea, I think, would also do that. Yeah, that's another good option. So you definitely have some options.
Right.
And like Bob said, you may want to consider adding, you know, when we say not to overly amend soil, that doesn't mean if you have, you know, subsoil and it's nothing but rock, that doesn't mean add tons of organic material like peat moss, but it does mean sometimes let's bring in some new topsoil. And there's a huge difference between mineral particles like soil, as in sand, silt, clay, and organic particles like peat moss and compost. Those peat moss and compost organic particles absorb internally water, and they are just like what Bob said. When you add too much peat moss to a hole that's that you're digging in clay, you create an in-ground container like a bowl.
All right, Tom.
It holds so much water.
All right, Tom, thank you for the call. 800-348-2551, the number. Fred Breglia is here from the Landis Arboretum, and Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery. Let's see. Let's go to James in Warwick, New York. James.
Hello, sir. I have black walnut trees, and the last couple of years I've been getting a fungus on them, and it's getting worse each year. and someone told me there's nothing you can do, and now I've noticed the fungus even on, like, oak trees in my area. Is there any kind of treatment?
Where are you seeing the fungus?
It's on the bark. It's almost like a moss grown. It's killing branches and stuff like that.
That sounds more like a lichen, doesn't it, Fred?
It does. That's the first thing I was thinking. I think that you're probably declining there to some other, and I'm not saying they don't have a fungus, but the fungus that attacks plants that, like you're talking about, oaks and walnuts and things like that, are generally never going to be like mossy looking stuff on bark. Generally with like the walnuts, and black walnuts are not even really overly susceptible. It's mostly the butternut or the white walnut. They look the same in many cases as a black walnut, unless you have a trained eye, but they have a canker, and it is a fungus that's wiping those out. And there's not really too much you can do with the butternuts. But if they are indeed black walnut, I would tend to think there's probably something else going on. And if you're saying oaks, well, that fungus has nothing to do with the oaks. The funguses that attack walnuts would certainly not be anything that would attack an oak. So my gut feeling is that you have some other stuff going on. From a diagnostic point, you know, if you could give us more insight or some photos, you could certainly try emailing me photos of them and the issues.
I will try that, but the I was told they're black walnuts. They, like, we get thousands of them all over the yard. I actually hate them because you got to run them over with the lawnmower. They're green, and if you open them up, you get, like, tar on your hands. It's almost impossible. Like, when the grandkids come over and play with them, like, they think they're
like black walnuts.
You can't get it off your hands. But what it is, it's
stain,
all over the branches and stuff.
Yeah.
So, we get this question
it looks like it's almost purple, but it's actually like a moss or a fungus growing, especially all over the bark and on all the branches.
All right, Bob, you were saying.
We get that question all the time, and what happens is you look at that and you think that's the problem, and really it's something else. It has nothing to do with it. The lichen grows on rocks. It grows on fence posts. It grows on inanimate objects. It's a symbiotic association of an algae and a fungus, and it uses the plant for support, but it takes nothing from it. So we often get people saying, gee, I got a tree with a problem, and it's got all this stuff on it, but there's some other problem.
All right, James.
Right, it could be very much. You know, a lot of times you'd notice more lichen on trees that are declining because there's more, less branches, more light, and, you know, a lot of times it gets the bad, you know, blame. But if you did want to send me photos to fred@landisarboretum.org, I'm very familiar with all the funguses that attack the oaks and walnuts. So if you certainly show me what you're looking at via a photograph or two, I'd certainly confirm one way or the other. And if you also show me the problem with the plant, like, what's the problem? Is it dying from the top down? Are the trees dying?
He's gone.
Down?
So
that would be another question for him. You know, if he's still listening.
All right. Well, maybe he'll send you an email. Let's quickly go before the next break over to Crystal in Pine Hills. Crystal.
Bob Grayson show, my favorite Saturday morning show on WGY. I'm with you. Once again, I'm cleaning up my rock garden. I am surrounded by chipmunks. They're all over there, even run over my hands. Is there something I can do? I don't want to poison them, but they're digging up everything.
Can you turn your radio down a little bit, Crystal, while your buddy Bob answers this question? Great. Fantastic.
You know, the surest way is to get one of those Have a Heart live animal traps and bait it with peanuts or peanut butter and try to catch them. Now, there's probably dozens of them, so you could be catching them for a long time. You can try some dried blood type repellents. There are repellents, the granular form, that you can sprinkle around. And there's different formulations. Some are dried blood. Some are oils. Some are castor oil. I would try one of those types of repellents in a limited area so you're not, you know, spending a lot of money to begin with and see if you can't get them to – you're not going to kill them. You're just going to move them somewhere else.
We have to take a break here. I'm so sorry. And, you know, Crystal, maybe you can tune into Bob's other show, which I didn't know about. But now that I know he's on another station, we'll have to talk to his agent.
I'm not there anymore.
All right, fair enough. And let's take a break. 800-348-2551. We have the very famous Bob Graves, who's on all kinds of stations. And Fred Breglia here. He's not as famous, but he likes to hug trees. We'll be back. You know, I give our producer, Jackie Orchard, a hard time mostly every day about most everything, but she really picked a good topic today, and the lines are just completely loaded, and I have a stack of emails here. So that means people are listening. And you know what? I just want to make this pitch to you. And I know the times are ridiculously tough for some people, and if you are laid off and money's tight, disregard what I'm about to say. But if things are all right for you and you can throw a couple of bucks our way, we may not even be able to have a fund drive at this point. It's due in June. Go to WAMC.org, WAMC.org. Throw a few bucks in the kitty. It's a secure online pledge. We could really use it. We're hoping in the next month to get the entire thing done and not have to do a fund drive in June because we don't even know how we're going to do it. So anyway, if you're listening and you got a couple, throw it our way, and we'll be happy for it, and we'll keep it going. Well, it's the gardening show today. Fred Breglia is here, and Bob Graves is here. The number is 800-348-2551. I have so many emails, we will not get through all of these. But let's do a couple here. This one's from Gail. Gail says, I have a hydrangea that every year gets a bug or worm that nests in the emerging leaves. Other than picking off the affected leaves and disposing them in the trash, is there something that I can do to eradicate this pest? All right, hearing nothing.
Well, I think that one could be taken care of with something like Dipel, don't you, Fred? Bacillus thuringiensis.
It probably is the right answer, Bob. I'd like to know what kind of bugs she's talking about that's getting in there, and I always like to know what it is. And hydrangea, something that gets into new bud. I don't really see that too often. How about you, Bob?
There is. I have seen it, and honestly, okay. I know what it is, and I've forgotten the name of it, but it kind of curls up the growth at the ends and makes a little nest for itself.
Cocoon type thing.
Yeah, and I do believe it's a chewing insect, and often the organic things like that will take care of that.
Yeah, and the BT works for a lot of those worms. It works for tent caterpillars, which you often see in forest, spring tent caterpillars, forest webworms. It does do pretty good with that kind of thing, and that's not organic, so it's nothing nasty, but it does do a really nasty job on a lot of those critters.
It's basically a poison to the insect, but it's an organic material.
Okay. This one is from Jody in Ackard. Looking for some creative and easy ideas to create a living privacy fence for my property line shared with my neighbor. Last year, we planted a white dogwood and would like to have a line of interesting trees or large flowering shrubs to accompany the dogwood. I don't want forsythia or arborvitae. Any ideas?
Oh boy.
Yeah, I mean, she's got a lot of options. I mean, Bob could probably pick a few, and I could too.
All right, well, why don't you each pick two?
You know, if she's if she has sun, and she said she planted a dogwood? Yeah, dogwood.
Yep.
So that tells me, it's probably, probably a coosa dogwood. And, you can mix. I'd like to say, what you want to think about before you start to plant things is think about interest. So I like to design things out in sort of a circular kind of, so you measure it out, sketch it out, draw in your kind of design shapes that you'd like to see in terms of size. You could draw this to scale relatively easy. You don't need to be an art major to do this one. And then you just label on there spring, summer, fall, and make sure that those spring, summer, fall are staggered through your living hedge, living fence, and that way you have a scheme, so that way you have something going on in the spring, something going on in the summer, something going on in the fall, and then even winter interest, like that dogwood, if it is a coosa, as it develops some really nice bark, you'd start to really see that. So I think you want to mix shrubs, trees, and balance bloom. And I tend to think, you know, going that direction will help us. It'll help you start to pick, because you don't really know how big you want it until you start to scale it out and say, well, I don't want nothing there that's 50, 60 feet.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm thinking she's going to be looking at more small things, maybe even a mix of evergreens.
Okay.
Some dwarf evergreens in there as well.
Wow.
You know, for spring interest, you could do one of the taller azaleas. For the summer, you've got hydrangeas. For the fall, you got Rose of Sharon.
Yeah.
You got river birch, which has an interesting bark in the winter. Witch hazel is something that some of them bloom in February. A lot of interesting things.
Okay, let's
go. There really are. And, you know, you could also put things in for birds. Crab apples with persistent fruit do really, really good for birds and wildlife. And there are certainly a lot of things that would help you get some butterflies and bees and other pollinators. Like Ichthyanthus is a broadleaf evergreen, and it does grow around here. It's not too common, but yet it is actually fairly common, and it's a magnet for hummingbirds and butterflies and bees and things like
that. Okay, let's now go to Jim and Adams. Jim, you're on.
Hey, hello. Hey, Ray.
Hey.
Yes, I'm the person calling early on in the show about planting strawberries for a ground cover. We grew a lot of strawberries in our big garden at our parents' home when we were kids, and we used to mulch them very, very heavily with sawdust, wood sawdust, not these colored mulch shavings and things you got in the market today.
Yeah.
And it kept the strawberries nice and clean, didn't have a lot of dirt spattering on them when it rained, and it blocked out all the weeds very, very efficiently.
Yeah, all right.
It's small particles.
Okay.
Yeah, and also a straw works really, really well for mulching, which is, you know, especially strawberry stuff. It helps to really make that soil black underneath it, and that's something that my folks have always used was straw. But, you know, that strawberries mixed in with some good mulch, and then, you know, you are working on a pretty good ground cover there, but it is going to require some maintenance to keep that fruit coming, but it certainly would work.
All right. Well, Jim, I'm going to have to let you go there. You have a terrible 60-cycle hum on the phone, and you've won the Golden Zach Award and irritated our engineer. But please call again, and thank you very much. Let's go now to Heather in Schoharie. Heather, you're on.
Hi. I had a question about a miniature Macintosh that we rescued from a garden center. We planted it last fall, and it did have some leaves. It's small.
Yeah.
And this spring, it looks like it wants to bud, but what's happened is where it's grafted, the host part has grown these huge apple suckers. I can't even tell if the top is alive at this point. I've scraped the bark a little bit to see if it's green, and it's not really.
If you're scraping that bark and you're not getting green right now, that's not alive. So what do you have below that? You have some suckers that have come up?
I have suckers.
From the rootstock or no?
It's an apple tree of some sort under it. It's actually blooming.
So it's kind of like the grafted part. The root system is live, but the top part you've lost. Is that correct?
I believe so. That's the part I wanted, too.
I know. That's often, you know, often those rootstocks are sometimes hardier, and that's often why they often will graft things like that, you know, trees that are a little bit less marginal onto hardier rootstocks. So that's not too uncommon. Macintosh, I know, does work in our zone. We have one at the Landis Arboretum that was planted in 1951, and, you know, I never sprayed, and it does really, really well most years. Some years it doesn't do as good in terms of the fruit production because we don't spray it, but, you know, on a normal year we do pretty good and eat around little blotches, and it does produce a lot of apples. But unfortunately, that rootstock will not come true to what you had. So that's another apple. You could train it up and just let one of those suckers go, and you'll have an apple tree, and maybe something that's a pretty good eater, but we don't really know. We wouldn't know what it is, but it could guarantee you that it wouldn't be a Mac.
Okay. Heather, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to John and Canaan. John, you're up.
Hi there, guys. Last fall, I moved several Alberta spruce using an excavator and transplanted most of them successfully, but one of them looks like it's browning out. It's an old tree, probably about 6-7 feet high. I put some fertilizer on them before, maybe about a couple months ago, but the one that I'm talking about is browning out. My question is there anything to do about it, or is this just a dead tree?
Yeah. What do you think, Bob?
Well, you know, you got nothing to lose by waiting just a little while to see. When you move something that big and that old, your percentages of surviving are much lower than when you move younger things because you're not getting a lot of the root system, even though you use an excavator. So, you know, you sometimes that'll push out new growth at the tips on a Dwell Falberta. But, again, I'd wait a little while. There's nothing you're going to do at this point. Fertilizer is going to make the difference.
No, and you already have adequate ground moisture. So, adding water right now is not really the culprit. So, you know, like, I think that Bob, you know, offered some really good advice. There's nothing wrong with waiting. And a lot of times with these dwarf Alberta spruce, I mean, yours is a little different case because you moved them. But a lot of times we see winter burn on these. And you will see browned out ones. And then by June or so, they're, you know, mid-June, they're starting to look pretty good, and then, you know, next year they recover completely over the course of the growing season. Happens with yews, it happens with a lot of things. I'd leave it alone, see what happens. By June, mid-June, if that thing, you know, is brown, then I think, you know, it's safe to say you could probably remove it, and at least you've done pretty well. Most of them lived, it sounds like, so good job with that.
Well, thanks for the call. Now up to Rensselaer County, and Karen, you're on.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Let's talk about rhododendron pruning.
Okay.
I have a huge, more than 6 feet tall. The branches, some of them have fallen. They're over 10 feet in diameter. It's huge.
Wow.
Three winters ago, it was just let go. 3 winters ago, it broke. So I cut off the big broken branch. Now that area looks nice. We've got 14 to 18 inch suckers growing out. So I thought to myself, I'm going to treat this thing like a lilac. So 2 weeks ago, I took out one more big branch. I don't recognize the difference between leaf buds and flower buds. So do you think I can take a few more big branches out of there at this time, or can I just cut them back so it's only like 6 feet in diameter? Am I going to – I don't know what to do at this point.
Yeah, you know, your timing on this question is great because that actually – and the reason why when you took that big branch off and you liked the result, it's because that kind of plant can be treated like a lilac. You can cut it back pretty severely right now as buds begin to swell before the growth occurs. You can cut them back pretty hard, but you are taking away the flowers and the foliage, so you're going to get less flowers, of course, on anything you're pruning right now in that kind of capacity. Mm-hmm. But you're not pruning it because you're trying to preserve flowers this year. You'd be pruning it to shape it for the future, and losing a few blooms to gain a much more nicer structured plant for the long term. I think, you know, you got a win-win there. So, yes, the answer to your question is you can. Time is of the essence, though, so we don't want to wait too much longer for that. Once it starts to grow out, you're better off waiting than selectively pruning it after it blooms.
Karen, thank you. Bob, you want to add anything before we go to the next one?
Well, I have done that with rhododendrons. Sometimes you do it. It's actually called stumping. You can take them down close to the ground. But when you do that, they will recover, but it can take 2-3 years sometimes.
All right.
Yeah, when you go all the way down, they could.
Yep.
That's right. And they will live if they still are done at the right time. There's not a lot of things you can do that with, but certainly rhododendrons and lilacs. Good point.
Debbie in Glens Falls. Debbie, you're on.
Hi, thank you. So I have a very, about a half an acre yard, and this year I had a lot of pine trees taken down, but there's still a lot left. So what I'm looking at now out the window is where the grass ends, and it's just, you know, woods and debris. I was wondering if there's a plant that I could plant as kind of a visual breaker between where the lawn transitions to, you know, the loamy, sandy soil. It gets very little light, and it's very dry because it's all sand.
That's a tough one. You know, you're further north, so you're a little colder than we are in the Capital District. You got sandy ground. You got the shade is the limiting factor. That really is going to limit what you can do. There are a few things. Rhododendron maximum is a good transitional plant. Some of the viburnums would work. You might be able to do boxwood, although that's not going to be very loose and airy. What do you think, Fred?
You know, it depends. You know, and a lot of times people say shade, and, you know, there's lots of shade is a relative term.
Yeah.
If you're getting filtered light in there, even though you're not getting hardly any real sunlight, but you're getting a lot of filtered light, that means that we could probably get away with some more things that we may not be mentioning because we're thinking dense denser shade. So if there is some filtered light in there, like a you're talking something that's more open or airy. We had mentioned it before, bridal reed spirea, it likes more sun than shade, but that plant can definitely tolerate a lot of shade. It just doesn't get as much blooms, but it does get spring blooms. It's a nice flower, nice hardy shrub. That might potentially work. There are some lower things, but they'll get about 4 or 5 feet tall. They would as well. And that sounds like the right kind of height for what you're trying to, in terms of what you're trying to accomplish there. So if you really can narrow down a little bit more how much light you're getting, and what kind of light, maybe even a few photos, send them to me or Bob. We might be able to narrow that down a little bit more, but shade would be your, just like Bob said, shade is otherwise we can tell you a million things. The shade is the, depending on how much of it you have, that's going to be the limiter.
All right,
there are certainly things that would work.
We only have about a minute and a half left, and I will just tell you, if you're listening at home, you know our guests are not in the studio and they can't get my hand gestures. So when you hear Count Basie, Bob or Fred, you hear him tinkle the ivories, that means it's time to wrap it up. Let's go with one more call here, and we go to Jay, who's on the road. Jay, you have 1 minute. Or not. You have plenty of time, Jay, since you left. Let's go to Leslie in Glens Falls. Leslie.
Hello.
Hi.
I just had a quick question, and I wondered if you were familiar with the tree or bush called ironwood.
Yep.
And where I could get some.
Okay.
Well, really quickly here, because I know we're running out of time, there's multiple common names associated with the plant ironwood. There's Carpinus caroliniana, which is a native plant, and it's often called blue beech. But then there's another one called Australia virginiana, which is a different genus, and that's hop hornbeam. And that's also got a common name associated with it, ironwood. So you definitely want to know which of those two you want. The one with the Carpinus is the one that looks like somebody's muscle, if you think of it that way. And if that's what you're thinking of in terms of the trunk, that's Carpinus caroliniana ironwood. And if it's more stringy bark that you're after, then that's going to be the hop hornbeam, also called ironwood. I would think that, any of the garden centers, it's a native, so, it may not be too hard to find, but, check your garden centers. Maybe Bob's got some over there. I don't know.
Well, there's Count Basie.
Think,
go ahead, Bob, quick.
Yeah, it's not something we sell a lot of. Some of those trees are kind of messy, and a lot of people don't like them because they drop flowers and leaves and twigs and stuff. So it's not a real popular one from the garden center point of view.
I got to tell you guys, this was a tremendously popular show. I apologize to everybody who's on the line and the 20 people whose emails we didn't get to today. These guys will be back again soon. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, thank you both for being here. Support comes from New England Hydroponics, offering a full selection of hydroponic supplies, organic soils, and indoor gardening equipment. Located in Auburn, Marlborough, Seekonk, and Southampton, Massachusetts, the indoor gardening experts, anyhydro.com. And Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, providing exhibit design, fabrication, and project management, temporarily closed to help keep our community safe during COVID-19 outbreak, accepting online orders, empireexhibits.com. Once again, a hearty thanks to Bob Graves and Fred Breglia for being here today. Thank you for listening. Once again, apologies if we didn't get to your calls. These guys could have done 3 hours today, and we still wouldn't have gotten to all the calls and emails, but they'll be back. Thanks to Zach Malloy, very calm today. Thanks to Amber Sickles, who took the calls, our producer Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. A favorite is back tomorrow on Food Friday, Chef Jennifer Clare. Right now, stand by for the Capital Connection.